Season 1990 was an interesting time for rugby league. Tina Turner is trying to prove that the game was simply the best, but off the field, the spectre of drug taking would soon take over the headlines. It was an interesting season for the league as one team fell and the rise of some superpowers began. Find out on League Legacy, Episode 5, 1990, Simply the Best. Everyone, welcome to the fifth episode of League Legacy 1990 Winfield Cup, Simply the Best. Once again, it's myself, AJ Lucantonio, your host for this evening's podcast, and which should be an interesting edition. It's going to be very similar to the Super League podcast that I did, which is ironically our first episode, but we're just going to go through 1990 as a whole. What I'd recommend, just so you can get up to speed with a few things in this episode that I will talk about, is go back through and watch the case studies that we did. We did Penrith, Newcastle and Easts, and I think that it'll help explain a few things as we get into this episode. So 1990 was a turning point for rugby league. It started to become that professional element. Tina Turner came along, Simply the Best became the anthem of the 90s. But Tina Turner came initially in 1989 and did a promo to What You Get Is What You See. And that became the turning point for the game. And it was proven that at the end of that season that women were becoming almost 50% of the crowd figures. So it was something interesting that the league had done, and it had helped propel the game forward, obviously, until Super League nearly destroyed it. So let's get into this while we are. So on January 7, superstar Tina Turner takes a break from filming her second commercial for the New South Wales Rugby League to be introduced to the rugby league media at a glittering function on Sydney's Harbour's foreshore. Tina is swamped by media from all over Australia during her two-week visit, and that was to film the first incarnation of Simply the Best. February, trouble looms over the league's proposed draft system following a meeting of the Players Association. Threats of court action and even a player strike surface, but the association faces trouble of its own with an election that sweeps former international Kevin Ryan into the presidency. Incumbent boss John Adams refuses to give way, claiming an unconstitutional election. 30 years later, Donald Trump would be doing the exact same thing. But all seriousness, the draft became a controversial issue in 1990 and into 1991, as I discussed in the Roosters case study in relation to Terry Hill. And he would be the centre of attention for that particular story around the draft and if it was legal, if it wasn't legal, whatever. Would a draft work? I think a rookie draft would be okay, but not an off-contract draft like it was done at the time. And I think that's where the league failed, and the way it was organised failed significantly as well. But before we get any further, this week's book recommendation is the 1990-91 Rugby League Annual by David Middleton. It's a good quality read, as are all of his annuals, and I hope that they continue beyond next year. Obviously, COVID cancelled Big League, and I really, really hope that this continues in its present form. It was a massive help for the research of my Super League endeavours, and I really hope that it continues for future. So, February 7, the highly successful Rugby League Express continues its second journey across New South Wales. Its display of league memorabilia are lapped up by an estimated 300,000 fans. So what this was, it was like an Indian Pacific style route. They'd stop along regional locations and display memorabilia. They ran it in 1989, and they also ran it in 1990. I don't know if it ran for 1991 because Channel 10 had a lot of money to do with it. And as television knows, Channel 10 do not have any money. So It probably went up Ship Creek before anything happened. Feb 9, South Sydney and St George draw 10-all in an uncharacteristically tame Charity Shield match at the Sydney Football Stadium. South's fans probably realised at this point that they wouldn't be anywhere as good as they were in 1989. And maybe this is where the red flag should have really rung for the Rabbitohs, because they would come dead last in 1990 by a significant margin. I think they'd only win 3 or 4 games that year. But we'll have a look at it at the end of the episode, where teams finished and improvements, de-improvements at the end of the episode. February 11, the $700,000 Channel 10 Challenge kicked off in Toowoomba, with Gold Coast defeating Easts and Brisbane losing to Penrith. So this was a knockout competition replacing the Tuis Challenge, and we'll go through the results when we get to them. February 18, a simmering feud between Souths and referee Bill Harrigan erupts at a cup match against Balmain in Parks. Rabbitohs coach George Piggins is initially fined $10,000 for comments he made about Harrigan's performance, but the fine is removed on appeal. So South Sydney and Bill Harrigan's relationship was fever point. It was like Parramatta and Greg Hartley back in the early 80s. Basically, Harrigan refereed their last two semis, where they lost quite convincingly to Balmain in Canberra, and there was an obvious rift between them at that point. So obviously, South Sydney, as most of their fans do these days, whinge when something goes against them. So we'll just see how that happens later on down the track with South Sydney. February 25, Gary Jack tears knee ligaments as Balmain go down 26-8 to Canberra. Poor Gary Jack, he got injured in an Alfa Romeo challenge. I think he broke his arm in the early stages of 1989 in the pre-season cup match against Canterbury. And then he gets injured and tears his knee ligaments in this one, and it'll rule him out for quite some time. I think he missed the first 6 matches of 1990, and he was ruled out. He played a total of 17 games, 19. So his first game was against Parramatta, where they won 31-14. March 7, Canberra win the $200,000 for their 12-2 defeat of Penrith in the Channel 10 Challenge. So the way the Channel 10 Challenge went, it was basically the first time the National Panasonic Midweek Cup got moved to the pre-seasons, when you had the Tuis Challenge run until 1995, I believe. So this is the way the results went. Gold Coast defeated Easts 32-18 at Toowoomba. Later that day, Penrith defeated Brisbane 18-10. Wests defeated Canberra 14-7. Then St George defeated Parramatta 28-24 with a try by Brian Johnston, who we'll hear from shortly. Newcastle defeated Cronulla 24 points to 10. Norths defeated Manly 12-10. Canberra defeated Illawarra 20-14. And Balmain defeated Souths 17-12. So that was the first round. Knockout stuff. Quarterfinals. Penrith defeated Gold Coast, 22-12. Wests defeated St George 14-12. Norths defeated Newcastle 16-12. And Canberra defeated Balmain 26-8. In the semis now, Penrith defeated Wests 21-10. Canberra defeated Norths 14-0. And then Penrith were defeated by Canberra 12 points to 2. So, as you see, Canberra setting their dominance very early in this one. March 9, long-serving St George Centre and former international Brian Johnston announces his retirement after failing to recover from a knee injury. So he tried to go around in the Channel 10 Challenge, obviously did well in that game against Parramatta because he won man of the match, according to David Middleton's annual. So he had a really good career, Brian Johnston. He was in the administrative part of the Dragons for a long time, as Virat Kohli got dismissed in the cricket. Side note, that was actually a good catch too. But back on Brian Johnston, he was a long administrator of the Dragons for a long time. He resigned in the fallout of the Jack DeBellin debacle, which I think is going to get resolved soon, thank goodness. March 11, Manly win the Nissan Sevens before a record crowd of 26,000 at Parramatta Stadium. That day, Parramatta announced the sacking of 5 players, including Paul Taylor, who we heard of in the Penrith episode, Jeff Bugden and Michael Mosley, after the club exceeds its salary cap. So the Sevens were also knockout style, and we'll go through the results right now, actually. So Norths defeated Newcastle 16-14, Easts defeated Canberra 24-10, Manly defeated St George 20-12, Cronulla defeated Penrith 24-10, Souths defeated Wests 18-10. Canberra defeated Brisbane 16-14. Same scoreline, Balmain defeated Illawarra, while the Gold Coast were defeated by Parramatta 16-4. In the quarters, Easts defeated North 16-4. Manly defeated Cronulla 20-6. Souths defeated Canberra 22-18, while Parramatta defeated Balmain 12 points to 8. In the semis, Easts 16, Manly 22. In the semis, Parramatta 44 defeated South Sydney 12. The highest margin in rugby seven in the world sevens, and they were the most tries for a single tournament. And then the final was 24-22 in favour of Manly, where Michael Erickson scored a hat-trick. It just wasn't good enough on the day to beat Manly. March 12, Grand Final winner captain Mal Meninga officially launches the 1990 Winfield Cup in a ceremony at the SFS. And also on this day, the $2 million advertising extravaganza by Tina Turner was played for the first time. So we heard Simply the Best go over the airwaves for the first time. March 14, Test 5-8 Wally Lewis is named at lock for Brisbane's first premiership game against Wests. And this begins the outer of Wally Lewis from Brisbane. And people are wondering, Wally Lewis leaving Brisbane at this time? It would be almost unspeakable to see Wally Lewis leave. But he did. He got stripped of his captaincy, replaced by Gene Miles in the later half of 1989. And he also got injured and would later be controversially ruled out of the Kangaroo Tour. Along a string of other things we'll talk about at the end. March 16, Premiers Canberra begin the 1990 Winfield Cup with a smashing 26-10 win over St George. First round winners include Canberra, Canterbury, Cronulla, Illawarra, Manly, Newcastle and Parramatta, while Wests draw with Brisbane. If you want to, I'd recommend going to Rugby League Project and looking at the year recap if you want to see all the winners, all the games, all the try scorers, all the goals, all the teams that play. I'd check out Andrew Ferguson and the team at Rugby League Project because their knowledge with this is pretty spot on. The research they've gone to is pretty dynamic, so I'll check that out. March 24, Greg Alexander became the first player to be sent off when he's marched by referee Greg McCallum in a match against Balmain. He's cleared of a dangerous contact charge, but wait, caution for obstruction. I mean, the judiciary after Jim Comyn's left became a joke, so that doesn't surprise me. Not at all. March 25, East's 29-year-old prop Danny Shepherd is rushed to St Vincent's Hospital intensive care unit after collapsing during the Roosters' win over the Gold Coast. He remained in a coma for 10 days before regaining consciousness. As one of the saddest, happiest story of the year, he is later diagnosed as suffering severe exhaustion and makes a full recovery. And that's one of the stories I spoke about in the last episode with the Roosters. He would never play the game again, which is a real travesty. Because as I said, he could have been a really good dynamic ball player and he's a really good front rower for the Roosters. April 4, Wally Lewis appears before judiciary after being accused of gouging Balmain forward John Elias after a bitter match at Tiger Town, where the Tigers beat Brisbane 18-16. Charges, counter-charges, sim binnings and penalties dominate the game. After a lengthy and expensive hearing, Lewis is cleared, but teammate Mark Hone is later fired for bringing the game into disrepute after accusing John Elias of gouging and then later withdrawing the accusation. April 9, Graham Annesley admits he wrongly awarded a try to Kerrod Walters in the Broncos' 14-12 win over Manly. He's relegated to reserve grade, not to emerge in first grade until July. So it makes a change. Referees admitting when they got the decision wrong. I mean, we've seen it a few times on the field where refs have made a mistake and they've owned up to it. I think Ben Cummins did it a few years ago. And no, it wasn't the six again. It was Good Friday game at our home bush. He cautioned Josh Jackson about the penalties. Didn't let him get back to his position and they played on. And I think South scored off it and Ben's just like to him, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have played on. But it's good to see that referees can do that. They can really be human, have a human side to it when they know they have made a mistake. April 10, New South Wales Board recommends a request to go to the International Board to allow in-gold touch judges to be used in Winfield Cup matches. In-goals is an interesting subject. I like them. Should they replace the video referee? No. I've heard that one before, but I don't realistically think it. I really believe video referee is better than an in-goal judges. Also, St George sack front rower Mark Blackburn after a breach of discipline arising from a reserve grade game. He subsequently signed by Penrith, but then the Panthers cancelled his deal before he plays the game. He is later snapped up by South Sydney. April 13, one of the game's greats, Eric Grove, announces his retirement after suffering a knee occurrence of a knee injury. And his decline in rugby league is one of the more sadder, really, because he was a dominant player for a really long time. But from 1986, I think coinciding with the collapse of Parramatta, really showed his deterioration. Like, he suffered a broken jaw in the first game in 1987, and he lost his confidence, really. He wore his headgear, and he just lost all confidence from that incident. And it was a real shame because he was a really dynamic player, and I encourage the younger viewers to go and to Google and Google Eric Grove Jr. try. I think it was against Canterbury in 1983. Beats about six or seven players and scores a pretty miraculous try. So I encourage you to view that. April 16, Canberra record one of its biggest wins in history, defeating East 66-4. Mal Meninga scores a post-war high of 38 from 5 tries and 9 goals. As a Roosters fan, me reading that makes me want to throw this book out of the studio. April 20, despite floodwaters raging through North Queensland, Easts and Canterbury stage a successful Winfield Cup match in Townsville, which finished a 12-all draw, so the East recovered, despite the fact Russell Fairfax played the video of 66-4 on the way home. And as I said at the time, bad move, Russell. Bad move. April 25, City defeats Country 28-26, one of the highest quality matches seen in years. However, the City first Country first game is declared a farce, where Graham Lyons and Jason Edwards score 4 tries each in the 38-26 non-tackle fest won by City. And I kid you not, that's what it reads in the book. April 27, Louis Lewis breaks down his hamstring strain, after lasting just 8 minutes in his comeback. Queensland suffer a triple blow where Tony Curry snaps his Achilles tendon and Kerrod Walters hobbles off with an ankle injury. As Norths go down in an upset, 14-12 loss to North Sydney at Lang Park. April 30, Queensland select his name Wally Lewis in their origin side, giving him every chance to prove his fitness. But an unusual fitness test in the hallway of the Maroons Hotel 6 days before the game, Wally ruled himself out. The second state of origin to be played in Melbourne has already declared a sellout. May 4, Kevin Ryan is declared winner of a postal ballot for the position of Rugby League Players Association by the State Electoral Commission. Jesus, they went deep for this one. And the US still can't figure out if Trump conceded defeat or not. So, Kevin Ryan became president and really stopped the draft dead in its tracks. And I think it helped a lot for the game. And we'll talk about the draft a little bit at the back end of this episode. So I won't talk too much on the issue at this point. May 9, New South Wales and an 8-match losing streak to defeat Queensland 8-0 in the lowest scoring State of Origin match of all time. The crowd of 42,000 watched the game at the Sydney Football Stadium. And this became really a turning point for State of Origin, because crowds were coming back into the football stadium. In 1988, when the stadium first opened, the crowds were pretty pathetic. Game 2 drew, I think, 40,000. And that was when the Maroons finished with 12 men because of every man and their dog getting injured. I think Langer suffered a fractured leg, Bob Lind the same injury, Paul Vaughan a fractured cheekbone, Mal Meninga fractured eye socket. I've missed one. There's one more I missed. I probably remembered if I had the research in front of me. May 15, Manly sign AIU and All Blacks second string fullback Matthew Ridge after coaches Graham Lowe's mid-season recruitment mission to the Shaky R's. Top All Black fullback John Gallagher announces his signing with English club Leeds. So the All Blacks have just been dicked by rugby league. They've lost both their fullbacks on the same day to go play rugby league. They just got screwed. Big time. And Matty Ridge would later become an elite point scorer and then Premier League Super League spokesperson. So he played 11 games, 2 tries, 43 goals for a total of 94 points. Michael O'Connor only got 87. So Ridge played half the games and got more points than Michael O'Connor. May 18, a historic East-West Coast doubleheader at stakes for the first time, with Canberra and Manly playing at the Wacker in Perth and Brisbane and Cronulla playing at Lang Park. Crowds more than 20,000 watch both games, both televised live on 10. May 21, veteran All-State of Origin campaigner Paul Vaughan is left out of Queensland's side amid several changes for the historic Melbourne showdown. And this kind of begins the demise of Paul Vaughan, if we can say that, because he would later get dropped to reserve grade by East, even though Jack Gibson reminisced on it, gave him a renaissance in the top grade. But then he went on to Channel 9, become a famous commentator, made that famous catch in the celebrity cricket match at the Gabba, hosted the footy show, hosted a press conference, and called Piers Ackerman a fat piece of shit. Did I miss anything? Maybe not. Maybe crack a fat on the footy show. I don't know. I think I missed something, but who knows. May 28th, the pillage of the All Blacks continues. News where Newcastle announced the signing of John Schuster. Television coverage of Winfield Cup matches in New Zealand begins to create a new level of interest in rugby league. May 30, a sellout crowd of 26,000 watched New South Wales recapture State of Origin's glory when they defeat Queensland 12-6 in a controversial match at Melbourne's Olympic Park. Roy Lewis is fined $5,000 for abusing a Dutch judge. Classic Wall. June 2, former All Black Matty Ridge begins his league career in style, kicking 6 from 7 in Manly's 24-8 win over Cronulla. June 3, St George returned to home ground at Cogra after the completion of their $3 million grandstand. Despite a crowd of more than 18,000, Saints fell 22-12 to Parramatta. So they staged games at some weird places, St George, I'll be honest with you. They hosted games at Belmore, at Caltex Field, before later returning to Cogra midway through the season. So, bit of a mixed bag to start the season, if you ask me. Where are we? June 6th. The world annual football ratings are released, while Lawrie Lewis is still rated number 158, despite his banishment from that position with the Broncos. The top 13 is Belcher, Martin Afire. I got a fan message from someone saying that Martin Afire tuned into the podcast. I can't confirm it, but if you did listen, Chariots, I hope you enjoyed it. Give us a message and hopefully you can come on the podcast. I'd love to do an interview. Look forward to hearing from you soon, hopefully. So the rest of the side, got a bit sidetracked there. Meninga, Kevin Iroh, Michael Hancock, Roy Lewis, Gary Freeman, Brad Clyde, Gene Miles, Gavin Miller, Martin Bella, Ben Elias and Steve Roach. So I gave the Roosters a bit of grief for not re-signing Gavin Miller. Yeah, he's just become one of the world's best players. So good job, Ron Jones, you fucking idiot. June 13, Queensland salvage pride in the Origin Series, claiming the final game 14-10. Ben Elias is named player of the series. Australian selectors caused some major surprises when they named the team for the one-off test. Bella, Elias, Roberts, McGaugh and McIndoe are all overlooked, although Bella and McGaugh get their chances through injuries to other selections. June 18, Asada conduct a lightning raid on South Sydney's training session, testing 36 players, and we'll get the results from those a little bit shortly. And safe to say, that would be some red flags for the future. June 23, Lawrie Lewis breaks his left forearm 4 days out from the France test in a game against St George. Mark McGaugh moves to centre, with Daly moving to 5-8. More injury news for Australia. Brad Clyde breaks down in a match against North with a serious knee injury, paving the way for Brad McKay to come into the side. Injury also costs Rob Linder his test spot. Also, David Gillespie is called in the starting lineup for Linder. Ian Roberts is ruled unfit when South Sydney rookie forward Mark Carroll is named the new reserve forward. So we finally made it to the test match, by the way. June 27, Australia thrashed the French 34-2 in bitter conditions in Parks. Brad McKay scores 3 tries on debut, emulating the feat of another St George junior, Bobby Bugden. 30 years earlier, McKay is later named man of the match. So that game was obviously against France at Pioneer Oval in Parks. 34-2. So the tries were scored by, let me get it up, Brad McKay got one. So Brad McKay got a hat-trick in that game and played really, really well in that game. He's proven himself for a long time that he can be a good player. But McGaw got a double. Daly, Meninga, and Shearer. The only negative is they couldn't kick a goal. They used 5 goal kickers. O'Connor none from 3. Meninga none from 2. Daly none from 1. Shearer one none from 1. Belcher one from 1 from bang on in front of the posts. June 30, one of the biggest stories in years breaks since when it was revealed 10 South Sydney players had tested positive to drugs. Fullback Scott Wilson is immediately sacked from the club. Wilson initiates court action, but the set matter is settled outside when he signs with North Sydney. The drugs matter threatens to split South Sydney in two, with coach and Lynx club president George Piggins calling for the sacking of the football club board over their handling of the matter. So, as I said earlier, things don't change at Souths. They'll continue to fight, they'll continue to do this and that. And they'll fight and whinge about anything, as I said. July 1, Mal Meninga is crowned the world's best player in a ceremony in Brisbane when he has received the Adidas Golden Boot. Ironically, on that day, Canberra beat him 22-20 while the Broncos won the finest games of the season. July 3, Russell Fairfax is sacked as coach of Easts. Good on you, Easts. Club steward Bunny Riley, praise him, is named caretaker coach for 2 weeks while Hugh McGann is on duty with New Zealand. July 11, Balmain launch a testimonial year for their favourite son, Wayne Pearce. Pearce prepares for his long-awaited comeback from a serious knee injury in what he's declared as be his final season of rugby league. July 16, Balmain prop Steve Roach is suspended for 4 weeks and fined $5,000 for and has been cited for patting referee Ward on the head and then abusing Itachi in a match at Brookvale Oval. July 17, Queensland coach Arthur Beaton is sacked and replaced by New Zealand-born coach Graham Lowe, sending further shockwaves through Queensland League circles. In a further blow to Queensland's prior former state forward Paul Vornish dropped from the Roosters' first grade side just 12 months after he was vice-captain of the Australian side. July 21, Newcastle play their way into the top 5 of a 10-4 win, one of their most significant victories in their short history. It was their 7th straight. And go back to the Newcastle episode, we talked extensively about that. July 22, Brisbane moved their place on the top of the table with an emphatic 24-22 win in the match of the day against Parramatta at Parramatta Stadium. Balmain trailed Brisbane by a further 3 points, with Canberra, Penrith, Newcastle all tied on 1 point back. July 23, the New South Wales Rugby League officially adopt the controversial player draft, and the league announces changes to the North-South competition format for 1991. July 26, Easts named Jack Gibson as full-time manager. 2 days later, it is revealed that Scott Wilson has once again failed a drug test and is immediately stood down by North Sydney. So, poor old Scotty Wilson. Newspapers report that 2 Brisbane players have tested positive to marijuana as the league's war against drug use hot sub. The ARL threatened life suspension to any player who tests positive to drugs in 1991. August 2, 5 East players test positive to marijuana. I touched on this issue in the Roosters episode where I said that that Jack Gibson handled this situation well. He dealt with the 5 players in-house, and I don't think they played the next year, but he dealt with it by themselves. August 4, ABC commentator Warren Bolan is censored by the league over comments made on the controversial drug issue. Now, I saw Bolan and Arfison going head-to-head the week after this at North Sydney. They went to town on each other during a spell. Arco was there alongside Gibbo and Warren Bolan. It was at Bruce Stadium. An interesting night. That was. August 5, South Sydney's horror season continues with Tucker Coleman, Mario Fenwick and Les Davidson all replaced uninjured 16 minutes into the second half of an embarrassing 38-12 loss to the Gold Coast. George Piggins is sacked the following day as Brisbane's 11-match unbeaten streak comes to a horrific end, being down 18-4 by an emphatic Manly side. So let's see who those 4 players got replaced by. Let's have a look. I've got the big book out, and we're going for it. So, Bruce Longbottom came on for Craig Coleman. Jim Sedaris, obviously, for Mario Fenech. Mark Lyons for Les Davidson. In front of a crowd of just under 4,000. August 13, former Queensland Australian halfback Mark Murray announces he'll coach Easts. August 19, Balmain's local hero Wayne Pearce makes an emotional farewell to his legion of fans at Leichhardt Oval in his last match of his home ground for the past 13 years. They would later, so they would go on to lose that game at Leichhardt, I think 18-10, off the top of my head, 14-10. Mark Laurie, Glenn Lydiard, Scott Martin tries. Mark kicked one goal for the Tigers. Brasher and O'Brien. Ian McCann kicked a goal in front of 15,000. Not a bad effort. Australia triumphed in the one-off test match against New Zealand, winning 24-6 in soggy condition. Caps a remarkable weekend when the ARU downed the world champion All Blacks 21-9. August 21... Craig Young is sacked as coach of St George after 2 years at the helm. August 26, the final round of fixtures leaves Balmain and Newcastle needing a playoff for fifth place. Canberra finishes minor premiers in all three grades. So this marks the beginning of the dynasties for Brisbane and Canberra. Canberra's began in 1989, so too with Penrith. Those three dynasties would really kick off this year. And you can see, obviously, the rise and demise of Penrith in the Penrith episode. But Canberra, I want to do a focus episode on Canberra so bad. And we can talk about how they're built from dead last in 1982 to winning the comp. And obviously, the recruitment of Belcher, Jackson, Meninga, Queen, Wayne Bennett helped to a certain extent. But as we know, you can't buy a comp. They had other players there. Laurie Daly coming through the rings. Chris O'Sullivan. Paul Martin was a young one that they had. Chica Ferguson was another one that they brought. You had blokes in there like Lazarus, Walters, Lance, Gaffey, Matty Wood, who had scored the match-winning try in that grand final. So, things are happening for the Raiders at this point. August 28, Mario Fenech signs to North Sydney after 10 years at South, so George Piggins managed to piss off Mario. August 28, Balmain defeat Newcastle 12-4 in a playoff with for fifth place, with Wayne Pearce playing one of his most inspiring roles. August 29, Rugby League poll reveals 43% of Winfield Cup players believe the use of steroids is practical in the game. The New South Wales Rugby League had earlier announced that testing of players would combat the use of any performance-enhancing drugs over summer. Peter Sterling becomes only the third player to win the Roffins Medal twice, joining Dennis Pickard and Michael Cronin. So Peter Sterling, obviously, would go on and win the Roffins Medal by a... No, it wasn't a big margin. He only won by 1 point over Jason Martin, which is quite remarkable. I mean, no disrespect to Jason Martin. He was Rookie of the Year and very, very close to a Kangaroo Tour in 1990. So here's how the table finished. I'm just going to read through the top 10-ish. Peter Sterling, Jason Martin, Steve Fulmer, Ian Russell, Mark Sargent, Kerrod Walters, Matt Goodwin, Jeff Toovey, Steve Carter, and Cliff Lyons. That is your top 10. Just remember the 10th place in the Roffman's Medal for a moment. September 2, Penrith account for Brisbane in the major prelim semi-final after Manly downed Balmain 16-0 the day before. September 3, Alan Jones as the surprise candidate to replace Lauren Ryan as head coach at Balmain, while Brian Smith will replace Craig Young at St George. Warren Ryan will replace John Bailey. So the coaching merry-go-round hasn't just been brought in the last few years. It's been going around for a long bloody time. September 9, Greg Alexander scores 22 points as Penrith upend Canberra the day before Brisbane ended Manly's run with a plucky 12-4 win. So read the reaction to Penrith making it. in the Premiers to Disaster episode, episode 2. September the 11th, 10th place in the Rothmans medal, but Manly's Cliff Lyons accepts the gold Dally M medal in a presentation at the Sydney Entertainment Centre. September 16, Canberra Thrash and Brisbane to move in their third grand final in four seasons. Mo Lewis makes his long-awaited comeback from injury, but will announce he'll sign with the Gold Coast. News reveals that Eric Grove has been lured by Alan Jones to make a comeback with Balmain in 1991. September 17, Andrew Farrer signs with Wests after 10 years at Canterbury. So, I want to get a few things off my chest here. Latrell Mitchell, when he moved from East to South, got a lot of hate. Same with Angus Crichton, Luke Keary, all those players. But you're not really seeing that negativity for players like Mario Fenwick, who went to go play for Souths, Andrew Farrer, who went to go play for Wests. You're not really seeing that hatred towards a particular player in this environment, not this early anyway. September 18, Wally Lewis is ruled out of the Kangaroo Tour after the most stringent medical examination ever undertaken before a tour. September 23, Canberra claim back-to-back titles. Lewis with a cool 18-14 dispatch of Penrith. The Raiders later have five players named in the Kangaroo Tour. Penrith's Brad Fittler became the youngest ever Kangaroo. Chris Johns, Kevin Walters, Ricky Stewart, John Cartwright, Mark Geyer, Mark Sargent and Brad Fittler all become internationals for the first time. Mal Meninga would become captain, but due to Lewis's absence. So, that concludes the regular season. We're going to dissect the 1990 Kangaroo Tour here. But before we do that, we're going to go through the team of the year, as chosen by David Middleton. But we're going to go through his top five players first. So, Mal Meninga, Glenn Lazarus, Peter Sterling, Cliff Lyons and Gary Belcher were the top five, so they're automatically in the team. So here's their full team readout. Belcher, Hancock, Meninga, Enninghausen, Ferguson, Lyons, Sterling, Lindell, Cartwright, Sirenen, Lazarus, Elias and Roach. That's a good damn team. So the Kangaroo Tour is where we're going to focus our attention now. So match one. Australia 34, defeats St Helens 4. Enninghausen 3 tries, Meninga 2, Walters, Roach and Hancock. Beats St Helens 4. Mal Meninga would normally rest in this game, but because Mal Meninga had a massive stint with St Helens, I believe, in 1984, he normally would play in this game. Match 2, Australia 36, defeat Wakefield Trinity 18, tries to Sargent, Johns, Walters, Cartwright, Lazarus, Fittler, Stewart, Alexander kicks 6 goals. On the end of a 26-7 penalty count against. Match 3, Australia 34, defeated Wigan 6. Australia 42, defeated Cumbria 10. And Australia 22, defeated Leeds 10. That's all in the lead up to the first test. First test went a bit haywire. 19-12. And that would later light a massive light for game for the second test. So in the lead up to that second test, they had a good win over Warrington. So some Canberra mates went up against Chris O'Sullivan. Australia defeated Castleford with a major injury in the early games, seeing a bit of reshuffling. And then you had Australia have an easy win over Halifax. Game two. It was 10-6 to Australia. It was 10-6. Ricky Stewart goes to the line and throws a cutout pass straight to Paul Lachlan. And he described it as this. My earlier blue was like I had a death in the family. I felt as though I'd let the whole touring party down. It was the worst moment of my life. And then, obviously, you have that play in the end of the game. It's 10-10. We're in their injury time. We throw a pass out the back, straight in the arms of Ricky Stewart, who throws a dummy. He's on his own. He's up to the halfway. He was waiting for Enninghausen. Meninga comes on his inside, escorts a dude off the ball, and scores one of the greatest test tries you will ever see. And I encourage you to listen to the commentary from David Morrow, because it is pretty damn accurate and one of the best calls for a try I've ever heard. So moving on, it's 1-1 in the series, but let's just have a look at this. Australia 34 defeated Hull 4. Australia 15 defeated Windness 8. And then in the third test at Ellen Road, Australia dominated, winning 14-0. So on to the tests in France. Get a load of these scores. 46-18, 78-6, 60-4, 34-10, 38-9. Ouch. Ouch, ouch, ouch. But that will do us for this episode for the news, for the teams. Let's go through the ladder for season 1990. We've made it to the end of the program with all the statistics. Let's go through the ladder. Canberra, runaway minor premiers alongside Brisbane. Penrith, Manly, Balmain. There's your top five. The demise of Souths, they went 2-20. That's right, 2 wins for 20 losses. No joke either. Gold Coast's Easts, obviously, as we discussed in League Legacy last time, they staged a massive renaissance and came back to avoid all hell going loose. Club Championship was won by Canberra, which isn't a surprise because they dominated, winning minor premierships in everything, winning 2 out of the 3 grand finals on grand final day, winning President's Cup, which is under 21s, and of course the Winfield Cup they lost. Reserves in extra time by 14-6. So that's going to do us for this episode of League Legacy. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. To collect the grace.